Hey everybody, this is Travis.
And I'm Ryan.
And it's good to be with you this week again. For us, it's a rainy, cold fall day, which looks beautiful. Like, it's absolutely stunningly beautiful in color, but it is kind of miserable as far as the essence of the day. It's just cold and wet and rainy.
Especially when your kids are doing online school and they're home all day. And then when they're done with school, it's like, oh, you can't go outside. Because
right.
It's raining.
Right. That's what I was saying. Like, it's just one of those senses of you're already pretty much stuck to the house. There's not a lot of other things to go and do around here. But now on a bad weather day, it's just like, and now you're totally stuck in your house. And so there's nothing else that you can do. So, yeah, my girls are home right now. Kaylin, actually, I walked into the house and Kaylin was obviously peeved because apparently she was trying to take an exam and it's one of these like locked browser exams and the server went down.
Ugh.
While she was taking the exam, like 6 or 7 minutes into it, like the server on their end just like stopped responding. And so by the time she got back up and found something that could, you know, it restarted a couple things, tried to make sure she could get into it, finally got it activated and found out that on their end the timer has still been going down.
Oh my gosh.
So she lost this whole block of time. Anyway, so it's the unique challenges. So like we just had that kind of discussion of like, okay, we'll talk to your teacher. Let's figure it out because obviously,
yeah,
you know, no, you're not. You can't just simply, you know, be credited for the 4 questions you got answered when the server has suddenly failed and you know you can't access it. So I don't know what your kids are going through, but my kids are having the ups and downs of remote education.
Yeah, like Shepherd, my 10-year-old, he just hates it. He just like sits there every day when he's on the Google Meets and stuff. He's like, I hate school. And he's never done that. He's always liked school. He's always been like, but he's just like, I hate school. This is the worst. I hate school. And, you know, just that kind of thing. Rex is like, eh, whatever. I'm going with the flow. Cademan, we have to make sure that he's actually doing the work. And it's like, are you like, we're looking at his grades going, how, like, what are you doing here? Like, do the work, dude. Do the work. Like, do your best here. You're killing us. You're killing us. This is not hard. So, yeah, that's our constant struggle.
I hear you. Well, it is a glorious fall day. And with the fall comes the fall discussions of things that can happen, things that should be done. And so I'm going to bring this up first and foremost just because it's a talk on our discussion right now, at least within our community. Halloween.
Yes.
Halloween approaches.
Yeah.
What are you doing for it? I know we'll probably have another discussion as we get closer to it because it's what we tend to do. So we won't sneak peek too much into it. But just off of the gut, in our community, there's a big back and forth as to whether or not it's appropriate to even hold any kind of Halloween festivities. I'm just curious to know, just gut, what's your take on going out and interacting with people?
Well, I think we're going to, you know, offer sacrifices to the devil and, you know, all
dark
kind
mage,
of
dark mage Reevely here.
Yes. We're going to be drawing pentagrams everywhere that we possibly can.
You reserved your goat?
Yes. I have reserved my goat. No, like Halloween, I think Chelmsford is doing Halloween. It's still on.
Okay.
So as far as the church goes, we usually do trunk or treat. We're not doing trunk or treat because it's listed as a high risk activity.
Right.
And so we're not going to be doing that this year just for optics sake, because
sure,
we don't want somebody to see that and like post it on a Facebook group. And then, you know, we're the church that's doing trunk or treat, even though I did hear my kid's school is doing trunk or treat, which is interesting. Cause I'm like, I thought that was like a high risk thing. And why are the schools doing this? But whatever. It's a weird thing.
It's so a weird random thing of what should and shouldn't happen.
I know. So we're just going to play it on the safe side and not do it. So we're going to do a drive through Halloween where we're going to put together pre-made bags with candy in them and just hand people as they drive through. And we'll do it like 2 or 3 o'clock on Halloween in the afternoon before like all the trick-or-treating starts, wherever towns are doing it, and just drive through. Cause we have like a little half circle turn around the front. So they can just kind of pull right in. We'll hand it to them.
Fun and
you know, I made some cards that you know, just Halloween, say, hey, from your friends at Chelmsford Bible Church with our website. And it's like, there you go. You know, have fun with that. So that's what we're doing, just kind of as an, as an outreach for our community, just to give them something, you know, to do. Just in case, like, maybe there's somebody, some parents that, you know, don't want to, they don't feel safe enough to take their kids, you know, house to house, but they can at least give their kids, you know, they, you can just drive through. It's pretty safe. We'll just hand it to you and that's it, you know.
I find that our community has interesting takes on when things should and shouldn't happen and, like, what is allowed and what isn't allowed, right? So, like, we've had the big back and forth on, like, you know, should you have a Halloween or are you basically murdering your neighborhood if you have Halloween? Yeah. You know, and then certain other things are like, oh, no, that's totally fine. Right? Like, it's like almost random. Like, oh, you absolutely cannot do that. Oh, but that thing, which is almost identical, totally fine, you know?
Yep.
But I ask that to get to our to a question I have, because I saw this at least on my news feed this morning. Out of Bethel, of which we've now talked a couple of times about. We've referenced it, but we've never really talked about it directly. Out of Bethel came a volunteer worship leader named Sean. I have no idea how to pronounce his last name.
I think it's Fart. No,
we referenced him because I think you mentioned that he came to Boston.
He did.
Okay, which I did not know.
He's actually coming. He's been going to about every state.
Okay, so we talked about that. We kind of like just referenced it and like, oh, what is the overall idea of this, right? But now I had woke up to this morning. I had a bunch of my friends who live in Nashville. Just up in arms because I guess he came to Nashville this past weekend. He did come to Nashville. And according to Sean, had 10,000 people, which it probably wasn't, but...
No, it did. He didn't have that many.
Okay, but according to...
I know,
evangelistically speaking...
Yes, you know, he's obviously an evangelist that likes to inflate numbers.
He likes to inflate the numbers. Evangelistically speaking, he had 10,000 people, but... Whether or not, I mean, the picture didn't look anywhere near like that, but it did look like it was a pretty massive turnout.
Yeah, they're a good
crowd. And it was definitely packed. It was definitely like...
Shoulder to shoulder.
Yeah, everybody's pressed up.
Not very many masks on.
No, and everybody's getting very touchy-feely as far as like lots of hands, lots of laying on of hands, lots of, you know, that kind of stuff. And it's, you know, it was split between people who were like, it was so good to come out and worship freely versus... people who are like, what are you doing in our town? And why are you doing this in a way that's going to present a really poor reputation for the rest of us who actually live here? But more importantly, I'm listening to, I'm reading a little bit of the interview and some of the discussion that he has. And he keeps qualifying these, he kind of like keeps categorizing them as worship protests.
Yes, that's how he gets around the...
Yeah, the these city are protests.
Yes,
you know, and so like that's where it's like so far from what I can from what kind of just doing some quick research, like from what I can see, and I think again you mentioned this when he came to Boston, there are no permits ever filed, there are no venues are ever actually rented out. No. It's just kind of like a random like, you know, hey, we got here, we scouted out this thing, then we just kind of like pop up a stage, pop up a PA, pop up whatever, and then do our deal. And I'm assuming like even the advertisement of it is kind of like word of mouth, quick social Facebook, kind of, like quick social media bursts.
And he doesn't want to draw like too much attention early on because he knows he's going to get shut
down. So it's not like, hey, in 2 weeks, we're going to be here.
Exactly. He just shows up. And see, like, so I read this story and I have to, you know, comment towards him and tweet to him because it just aggravates me to no end.
Yeah.
And because I was reading the story and Nashville Board of Health is investigating this because the Board of Health has said he did not pull permits to do this.
Interesting.
And the chief of police came out and threw him under the bus too and said this, I forgot his exact quote, but basically said this was not a good idea to do because it brought, and Sean even himself said they had to change locations 3 times because I guarantee the city of Nashville said no, no, no.
Yeah.
And he just ignored it and just kept going and calling it these worship protests. Because here's the deal. If you're a Bethel person, maybe you shouldn't be. But
different episode.
Yeah, but if you love this guy, really follow him for a while and really examine why you like him, because he is not about Jesus. He is about him.
Mm.
This is all for him. And he may not say it that way. He likes to, you know, wrap everything in the word, in the name of Jesus and all this stuff. he is about him, because if he was really about Jesus, he would respect the regulations of these cities and right. not go from town to town. And also, he never, ever reaches out to the local churches.
Right. I mean, like I said, you know, when
we
you
didn't, I didn't know that.
I had no idea.
The only way I knew he was here is because I saw it on Facebook.
Yeah, I had no idea he was
in. And it was after the fact. So, and I talked to another guy that I knew in Boston, another pastor, and he's like, I didn't know he was here.
Yeah, right. Like, that's the thing. Like, I mean, you and I both have, you know, a lot of connections in Boston. We don't live that far outside of the city. We're within half an hour or so of the city. So it's like, it's not like we're, you know, on the other side of the state. It's like, we're, you know, Boston is the nearest big city right to us. We both have lots of connections and interaction in Boston. I had no idea, heard nothing, except after the fact. And so, you know, I'm kind of in this point where part of me wonders, I guess there's a couple questions, because I noticed, like, even Bethel has kind of distanced themselves
from Bethel him actually threw him under the bus.
Yeah, like, Bethel's kind of like, you know, hey, this is not sending him out to go do these things.
Yeah, it's they
like,
just kind of
like, they made it real clear. He was a volunteer. He is not staff. He's not, like, a paid person. Like, he was a volunteer worship guy. He's off doing his own thing. You know, he's not working within the guidelines. And so they put some space in there. So I guess part of me questions what is the value of almost like a rogue person running around holding these things? What's the deal with that? And then secondly, I guess my question is, you know, calling it a worship protest,
what are you protesting?
That's the thing, right? Like, it makes it seem, it puts it kind of in this idea like that somehow worship or the church is under oppression or persecution.
And it's not. It's not at all.
It's not. And so I you know, I get that maybe he's using just a blanket word protest, but you kind of get the sense of like following some of the people who seem to come to these things, like they're viewing it as like this is their opportunity to get out and really, you know, really get break through this oppression and persecution of, I don't know, health and safety. So I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
So to call it a protest, first of all, to me, just kind of almost flips the middle finger to the actual people that are protesting things, because it's like
totally.
That's how I take it.
No, I'm just, totally
you're
with
just
you.
You're just like hey, yeah, here. Hey, here's my protest.
You're dealing with your racial injustice. You're dealing with systemic racism. You know, you've gone through gender inequality. Like, but hey, let me come here with my worship protest and try to rub shoulders with you as if this is the same. Totally agree with you.
Because the first time I heard about this was that he did it at the memorial for George Floyd. Right.
Okay, this is the same guy. I was trying to figure out if this is the same dude or not.
So he showed up, and you know, you read, you know, you see his account of this whole thing, and, you know, people are getting saved and all this stuff, which is a total lie.
Yeah.
And so then you read accounts of people who are at the George Floyd Memorial, and they said, yeah, this guy, this church guy shows up, and their band is so loud that the people playing music for the memorial had to shut down because they were so loud. And, you know, they're drawing people away from the memorial, going in and saying, why don't you come over here? Instead of going there and lamenting with people and mourning with people, whether you agree with the, whatever side you stand with the George Floyd thing, it was a human life that was taken,
right?
You know, and it probably shouldn't have been. And, you know,
well, and it obviously resonated with a certain sense of injustice and persecution and enough. And, you know, so it's like, regardless of whether, you know, how you view that event, it's kind of like it put community into pain that got vocalized. And I think that for churches and for pastors, you know, to be deaf to that, you're doing your own congregation, you're doing yourself a huge disservice to basically try to gloss over it or to be deaf to it. And especially to show up at someone's event and, like, try to recreate, basically try to horn in on their gathering in order to promote your thing. Yeah. It just seems poor taste.
So I liken him to, so, you know, you got the story of Job in Scripture, right?
Yeah.
And you got Job's friends who show up after Job has gone through so much. And Job is just a broken man, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, he's very depressed. You know, he's like, cursed the day that I was born, all this
right,
stuff.
Right, right.
And the first 7 days, the friends sit there and say nothing. And you're like, okay, awesome. Mm-hmm. But then they start talking, and it just made it worse.
Right, you're almost like, actually, the silence was better.
So with this guy Sean coming in, he's like Job's friends when they start talking.
Yeah.
You know, he's not going in to lament and all this stuff. He's there to promote him. And here's the dangerous part of him kind of being the rogue guy that you call him.
Yeah.
There's no accountability there.
Well, that's what I'm saying, right? Like, it's like
part of me goes, there's no overseeing that says, hey, you're either going to stop or we're done.
Well, and
you're,
that's where part of me gets a little frustrated with kind of the worship industry, the machine behind it, right? Yeah. Like the actual money-making machine, because Bethel has a certain celebrity status now simply because of the amount of music that they've produced and the fact that they have turned their worship leaders and their worship pastors into kind of church celebrities, right? Yeah. Like it's within some church cultures, like they're on the same level as, you know, what would be televangelists in other church cultures or a prominent preacher in this other culture, right? Like I think there are some people who know, they probably know Bethel's music and Bethel's worship people more than they know like Bethel's pastor.
Yeah.
Right? There are some people who probably know the name of certain Bethel, you know, kind of connections, and they would like Bill Johnson. And so, you know, there's this sense of like that celebrity idol, you know, idol worship is really what I guess what it would come down to, right? Like the sense of like, so I think that when you do these gatherings, right, like you got someone who's basically kind of coasting off of their celebrity closeness, whether they are or not specifically represented, they've been close to the organization now enough to at least be like, hey, I was with so-and-so. And it kind of feeds into those cultures where it's like, it's not like this is a local church worship leader going, hey, we're going to go meet in the park and just start singing some songs and raising a voice of hope or trying to remind people that there's a God who's aware of the brokenness of our world. And, you know, a handful of other churches pool in together to do something. Right? Like, it's building off of that sense of, ooh, a celebrity is here.
Yeah.
You get to see so-and-so there from such-and-such church come and sing that great big hit single song. And so it's like, it feeds not only that sense of like, wow, you are totally deaf to the needs of a community or the health and safety of community. It's like, it also feeds into that kind of like consumerism of the gospel, consumerism of the church of like, oh, this is real worship because it's being led by a celebrity worship person.
And here's the other thing. Makes me think like he's, and I hadn't thought about this, so we were just talking, he's kind of flipping the bird too as well, is actual musicians who this is their career.
Yeah.
And they cannot tour.
Right.
Because of regulations. But yet he can call his a protest and he can go tour around. Whether he's making money off this or not, we don't know. But it's still, the musicians are going, we're sacrificing our livelihood for the safety of others, but yet you can go out there in the name of Jesus and do this and call it a worship protest. That cannot sit well with, you know, musicians who this is their livelihood.
Right.
They go out there and do this. And also, like, what kind of a better impact would it have made if he brings a group and or he, like, reaches out to local churches in the area and said, hey, I know this is, you know, they're, the George Floyd Memorial is going on, and I know it's caused division in our country, and you know there's people on both sides. You know, what if we just showed up and went, and obviously adhering to regulations, let's wear masks, all this stuff, and let's just surround the memorial and just pray the whole time, just lament. Right. How much more of an impact would that make when people are saying, you know, oh, what are you guys here for? It's like, hey, we're just here to pray. We're just here to lament with you. We're just here to just show our support and acknowledge the fact that this is something that was done unjustly. We're recognizing the injustice of this, and we're praying for the God that we believe in, who is a God of justice, that justice will be done and that your voices here will be heard. How much more of an impact would that have made in people's lives to show that kind of humility?
Yeah.
Rather than get up on the stage and wave your wavy blonde hair and sing and have everybody, you know, you drawing all this attention to you. And the my problem, and going back to the accountability thing, when he has gone rogue, I think it may come to a point where maybe, and I think, again, this may be hard because he doesn't advertise it. If the local church, like, if I knew he was coming, I might go down there and say, you need to stop. This is ridiculous, and you need to stop.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's the other part of me. It's like part of me says, because there's no connection, or at least from what I can see, there's no connection or communication with local churches. It kind of feels like this fly-by-night, like the dude comes in, he does his big thing, he gets people from all these local churches. So they're all community people who live and, you know, do it.
But
and
not
so,
a lot of leaders.
Right.
Not
a lot of pastors. He takes off, and, but it makes it like, you know, all the articles are like, oh, look at all of these Christians who gathered to do this worship.
Exactly.
Protest, which makes it feel as if like all of the churches were like, we need to be part of it. Right. So in other words, like from a If you're outside the church, all you see is like, oh, Christians got together to hold this thing. And you automatically just go ahead and assume the pastors or the church leaders or the, you know, like this was somehow a coordinated event and that, you know, that your church A, B, and C up the block have just simply thrown all caution to the wind and they've just simply decided to, you know, do this thing. I don't know. It just feels weird. It feels unnecessary. I would have a hard time supporting it. I'd have a hard time not actually probably protesting it. You know what I mean? I'd be like, pastors against worship leaders? I don't know how to do it.
Worship protest.
Right? It's like, I don't know. It just seems like an odd thing. It's not a protest. It's, you know, I don't know. I feel like that's one of those things where people are kind of letting their freedom maybe be a stumbling block.
Yeah.
You know, like, that to me is kind of the definition of that. Of like, okay.
It's not loving your neighbor well.
It's not loving your neighbor. It's loving you well. It's not being mindful of just what's needed. And listen, I understand. There probably is a sense of being able to tap into the, you know, people's need to do these things that feel normal, right? That feel like, well, this is what we should be able to do. And so, like, part of me goes, like, I get what he's tapping into, that dynamic that he's tapping into. But because he's doing it in the name of, like, all of the church, right? He's doing it in the name of, like, all of Christianity. That's where I feel like the line gets kind of like, dude, you're crossing it, and you're way out in left field, and very few of us are with you.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I agree.
Weird times, man. That's a weird one. Christians gone rogue. I mean, usually when I think Christians gone rogue, it's because we've got another, like, Joel Osteen thing to promote, right? Like, it's another, like, you know, hey, look, another televangelist has gone off the rails. Or, oh, look, another fundamentalist has had himself a breakdown. But in this case, it's just sort of like, these are people I feel like could be in your church, in my church.
Yeah, I know.
But they could get sucked into it because it feels and looks and sounds so normal, right? To be able to, like, oh, we're going to hold this worship protest or a worship rally. Like, it feels like something we should support, and yet, I don't know, it's definitely, to me, like, you're way out of bounds.
Yeah. So speaking of out of bounds.
Oh, my goodness.
Another thing to...
What has Twitter delivered to us today?
Twitter has delivered great stuff to us today. So there is a guy...
It's a gift that just never stops giving. I know. It doesn't.
There's a guy who is a theologian. He's the director of public theology and MBTS, I think that's Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary, in the PhD program. His name is Dr. Owen Strain. And he has come out, and because there's a movement in the church now, for wokeness, right? And it's just a call for, and I know some of this can, anything that's kind of reintroduced in the church or, you know, brought up can go off the rails.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes it probably does go off the rails, right? And, but basically the call is for, and it's coming from a lot of the, you know, our minority brothers and sisters who are saying, hey, you need to start paying attention to our voices. Mm-hmm. You need to start hearing us. You need to start listening to us. Much like, you know, I think it likens to Dietrich Bonhoeffer when he came to America, and he was heavily influenced by the black church in America because he realized his theology was very limited. And when he went back to Germany, he realized, I cannot sit back and do nothing, because if I sit back and do nothing, I am just as complicit in what's going on as if I were Hitler doing this.
Yep.
You know, and so that really affected him, and it really and so I think that's just a call today, like this for the church to kind of waken up to, hey, there is racial inequality going on within the church. Mm-hmm. We need to be aware of it. So Owen Strain has and others like him who are more in the reformed category are kind of speaking against this, because their whole thing is, we just need to preach the gospel and that will change people.
Uh-huh.
And my issue with that is, and again, I'm a preacher, so that's what I do. I preach the gospel.
Right. Like, we don't take away from the idea that, like, we do believe the gospel changes people. We believe that that's what Jesus came to do, and that's exactly what happens when people encounter God. So we're not taking away from
the gospel. We're not taking away from that. But on the other side of it, you can't just say, let's preach the gospel. Because that's coming from a posture of, people will come. And when you say, in today's context, when you say, let's just preach the gospel, that's all we need to do.
Right.
You're just preaching the choir, because the only people that are hearing you preach the gospel are the people in your churches.
Well, especially I think when you say it like that, at least in the way that Owen says it here, or kind of infers it, it reminds me of kind of like James, right, where what good is it to walk up to someone who's, you know, kind of poor or sick or hungry and be like, be of good cheer. Be warm and well fed.
Jesus has saved you.
Right, right, exactly. It's like the gospel is really, like when you say all we got to do is preach the gospel, I don't really think that you are.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because it really doesn't sound like you're doing anything. Right, like, it's almost like a passive preaching of the gospel. Like, oh, as long as I say something that ends with, you know, Jesus, 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 that was enough for your life to be radically transformed. When you and I can also both sit here and realize, like, we've talked to plenty of people, told them all of the stuff about God, told them all of the stories of grace, shared with them the truth of who God is and who Jesus is, and nothing has changed for them.
And so he goes on to say, like, you know, he was speaking, you know, at, and this is on his church Twitter feed, a small clip of a video. I didn't watch the whole video, but I read some other responses to it that I had watched the whole video, and it's basically the same, but he basically says that we must not tolerate the spread of wokeness any longer. It is time for a line in the sand. And he goes on to say that, and this is him tweeting, in churches and institutions, those who teach and promote wokeness, binding the conscience of people with new unbiblical laws, must face Matthew 18 discipline. The church has tolerated the spread of wokeness too long. It is time for a line in the sand. And in the video, he even says, like, they should be excommunicated. And so my thing is, my problem with that is Matthew 18 says that you should go to the person one-on-one.
Mm-hmm.
If they do not listen, then you take somebody else with you. And if they still do not listen, you bring them before the church. What he's doing is not Matthew 18 discipline.
No.
He's calling people out in a public way, and it's like, have you gone to them? Have you heard from them? Have you listened to them? Have you talked with them?
He's just bypassing all that and jumping right to the, he's just chuck them out because the church doesn't like you no more.
Yeah, and it's like, because then I saw somebody else, like another Twitter feed that said, you know, it wasn't his, but, you know, they were agreeing with him and started listing off all of these people who are involved, that they think are involved and should be you know, kicked out of the church. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this Twitter account said,
I like a church that has a running tally of other people that shouldn't belong.
I know,
in the
right? Right.
Hey, how's your list going? Have you increased it? It's like a really, really warped Santa Claus.
Yeah. He said notable individuals that are associated with this false gospel include Eric Mason, Tabiti Anwabwile, I'm sorry if I pronounced that wrong, but Paul Tripp, Jarvis Williams, Anthony Bradley, Tim Keller.
Oh, of course.
Matt Chandler.
Because when I think rogues, I think Chandler and Keller.
David Platt.
Okay.
Ed Stetzer.
I know Ed. Ed is probably a little bit of a radical, but I'll always keep him on my list.
Walter Strickland, Jamar Tisby, who actually wrote a book called The Color of Compromise exposed the racism that's gone on in the church. So that's interesting. John Ortland. And Phil Vischer.
Oh, right. From VeggieTales.
And so it's just interesting, you know, he lists all these people, and I responded to that one, and I said, it's interesting how those like Owen Strain and apparently you will call for Matthew 18 discipline, which says to go to the individuals first privately, one-on-one, but you don't actually practice that.
No.
So that is not unifying.
Obviously, sending a tweet is exactly the same thing as going and have a private conversation with someone.
I think it must be send the tweet, and that checks off all three of those boxes.
Totally. I mean, that's what else is Twitter for?
That's right.
At this point in our lives, what else is Twitter for? It obviously, you know, qualifies all three of those steps, and you can just go right from I sent my tweet to you are now
but here's
excommunicated from my circle.
He lists all those people who have Twitter accounts, and all of them do, and doesn't tag any of them.
So they're not even tagged in the post.
They're not even tagged in the post.
Who said what? What are you talking about?
They're not even tagged in the post. He does nothing to tag anyone in the post. So I've been seeing more of this lately, where this, you know, this whole idea of we need to kick all these people out of the church, and it's like, you know, Matthew 18 is about discipline, yes, but it's discipline with the hope of restoration.
So,
like, it's and it It's to bring people back to Jesus, not push them further away from Jesus. And that's the whole, even in 1 Corinthians 5, when Paul says, expel the immoral brother from among you.
Right.
And hopes that,
in the hopes that, there's that, a restoration.
They be, that they will be restored.
You know, this is where I struggle with a lot of my Reformed friends, right? Because I've mentioned this before, as someone who probably would actually find a really good, comfy home in the Reformed Church, except for the fact I have a few things that just prevent me from being able to really launch there, right? Like, just some doctrinal stuff where I go, like, I love the convenience of not having to think through harder things. Right? Like, that's why I sometimes feel with some of my more, like, I'm not talking about, like, just, you know, regular, you know, Reformed Church. I'm talking about, like, people who take it to, like, that really, really hardcore legalistic level. Right? Like, there's some ease in that. There's convenience in it because it really cuts some things so black and white. You don't actually have to get too complex. You can just think of it, like, well, it doesn't say this, so I don't have to think about that, or I don't have to agree with it, or I don't have to engage with it. Right? Like, which is kind of an ignorant but very convenient way to live. But then, like, some of the other things I sit there, I think I'm like, you just simply don't have, I don't know, I struggle with a lot of that kind of Reformed black and whiteness of your ship just seems really, really narrow and really small, and I don't really know that I would be able to stay like that for very long. I feel like at some point they're going to have some kind of issue that just destroys their whole state of existence, right? And it's just, you're going to end up with so many of those people, because, like, I think a lot of the folks that I talk to, especially, or I read about, where they've had huge crises of faith that usually end up causing them to, like, leave the faith or leave the church, more often than not, they are coming from these more kind of, like, strict, reformed, you know, very controlled upbringings or environments, where because you can only blindly believe one way, the minute anything kind of that comes in that shatters that way of thinking or presses too hard against that way of thinking, you either have to reject that person or you have to reject that environment or that teaching, right? And so I think that's what I find with these, is like the problem that I run into with a conversation like that is it just basically puts a bunch of really great people who stand and fight for our faith pretty openly, and are, especially like Chandler, Keller. I mean, these are people who are
follow a lot of those guys.
They're great apologists. And I don't agree with Keller and Chandler on everything, but I would not take away from the fact that they have great apologetics for why they believe what they believe, what they believe about God, what they believe about Christ. And the fact that you could basically be comfortable just pushing all of them off and be like, nope, you're all out, that makes me sit there and go, like, you've got a pretty narrow view of some stuff.
And my problem with the way he did it was he did it from a pulpit. And it's like...
And Twitter. It's like the double whammy. Like, I both preached this and tweeted it.
And it's like, that's not the place
to
do that at all.
No.
Because you did not go and visit with that. You know, I'm not saying I'm not talking about you tweeted to them. I'm saying you called them or you visited them face to face and said, let's talk about this. I have an issue with what you're teaching. And you never know. They could, if you did that, they could probably explain it and you'd be like, oh, maybe I was wrong. You know, because I've followed some of these guys like Jamar Tisby. I've read his book, Color of Compromise. I mean, the dude is not here to divide the church. He is here to say, hey, this has happened and we've ignored it.
Yeah, and let's also call it this. Like, there's, in my point of view, like, there in my mind, there's a little bit of a difference between someone saying, hey, this person over here is teaching something nonsensical, like, you know, women must wear pants. Or must wear dresses.
Those were the simpler times.
Those were the simpler times when we just had to sit there and rile against guys who were like, women need to be in pants or dresses or whatever you can. But yeah, that's the kind of stuff where it's like, it's so obviously unbiblical or so obviously extra-biblical that it's like, okay, you don't even deserve... I don't feel any compulsion to sit down and be like, we need to have a conversation before I call you out on that. I'd be like, dude, you are publicly just spouting off nonsense. But then you take someone like Keller and Chandler. It's like, these are not people who are spouting nonsense. These are people who are incredibly well-educated. They're well-spoken. They have incredibly mindful and I think, very gracious views. Mm-hmm. And very gracious views towards people who don't agree with all of their stuff, right? Like, so it's like, Keller's never like, oh, you and I don't agree on this? You're out!
No, he'll welcome you to the table and say, let's sit down and talk.
Exactly. So, I mean, I just feel like that's the kind of thing where it's like, you know, I don't know. I feel like you need to probably go back and restudy all of that portion of Matthew before you just kind of grab your one excommunication scripture and run off it. That being said, for next time, because we are building towards an election season.
No good.
And these kind of conversations are becoming more and more prevalent, at least on my Facebook feed. I know they got to be on your Facebook and Twitter and Instagram.
Always.
Things like, here's what I'm finding more and more right now. I open it up. I have always positioned myself to the best ability as a centrist. And so I've noticed that I tend to be the balancing point between different groups of my friends.
Which I would say that's more like Ed Stetzer who does that. He does that right? Quite well.
So like I tend to have a lot of friends on the far left and a lot of friends on the far right. And oftentimes I am the common point of connection and relationship between these two groups. But I'm more and more having a hard time balancing these groups because more and more often I start, you know, browsing a feed or I'll browse a blog post or I'll browse something and I get this sense of like, if you agree with X, Y, and Z off of the other side, you cannot be a Christian.
Yeah. Because our faith is directly tied to
Christ. Right, absolutely. So if you're coming from the Democrat, like if you're coming from a little bit more of a left-leaning side, you know, if you agree with this, that Donald Trump said, you cannot be a Christian. Or if you're coming from the right side, if you agree with this, that Biden said, you cannot be a Christian. And it's becoming tiresome and wearisome and annoying. And I am finding myself way more readily just hitting the unfollow and even unfriend button of like, bam, 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 bam. So we'll have to say that to next week because we're kind of out of time for this week. But this will have to be the discussion, especially as we get closer to the next couple of weeks of like, hey, we're talking rogue Christians, but now what do we do with these Christians who are on polarized sides and just ready to fling each other out based on
excommunicate some people
over some politics?
Yeah,
because you know the church has never been healthier than when it was excommunicating people over politics.
Oh yeah, it was super healthy then.
Remember those dark ages when the church and politics were kind of like hand in hand, and people were like, "Hey, readily burned."
Yeah. I've been to the Tower.
Good times.
I've been to the Tower of London. I've seen the writing.
That's right. We've seen the writings of the walls of Tower of London. We were there as well last year, and it's like I remember seeing a lot of those ones where like these people were imprisoned for nothing more than political stances, but the church was the one doing the imprisoning.
Yeah.
Good times. So we'll have to get to that next week. We will talk to you soon. It's been good and fun, and all the other stuff in between.
See ya.
Hey everyone, it's Travis.
I'm Ryan.
And this is, as always, the Wheat in the Chaff that you are listening to. Thanks for joining us today. And we've got a couple of key things that I feel we can just launch right into with. It kind of carries over from a little bit of our last conversation. I don't know if you noticed, but America's worship leader. America's worship leader.
How do I not notice? I mean, I notice everything he does.
Has been approved. He actually got permitted. We're talking Sean
Foyt.
I heard somebody say it.
I was like, Foyt. Oh, that's how you say it.
Not Fuchs.
Yeah, I'm like,
I figured it had to be something.
Maybe re-spell your name because it's weird.
Yeah, anyway, America's worship leader, Sean Foyt. Move over Chris Tomlin. Step aside Matt Redman. Sorry, Darlene, no longer you. It's Sean Foyt, America's protest worship leader, has filed for a permit and was approved for a worship protest. And I believe like the National Mall in D.C.
Yeah, and he's already been there once, I think.
Right, but this is coming off of Nashville, where he kind of did the more classic Foyt, which was to just kind of show up in a city and do his thing, and then leave before the cops can start arresting someone.
Yeah, exactly.
He's actually gone for the permitting. But what's more importantly is he's been approved. Now, I don't actually know what goes into holding a protest. I've never formed my own protest.
No.
So maybe they just get approved regardless of the situation. But like my understanding is, from what I read, is that he was approved for a protest. They are expecting up to 15,000 people to attend. And DC has basically said, hey, we're going to, basically say, hey, here are all the CDC guidelines. Here is everything. But we're not there to enforce anything. Which means you can basically be guaranteed you're going to have 15,000 people crammed shoulder to shoulder. Because, the permit says that there will be spacing and there will be all this different stuff and there will be mask requirements and there will be a table with Bibles where they'll also have a nice sign listing all the CDC stuff. But you know, if history has proved anything from Sean holding these protests, you know it is going to be a shoulder-to-shoulder crammed-in event taking place in D.C., and I just want your thoughts on that.
And, you know, he's probably going to say, hey, turn to your neighbor and
give him a hug and a kiss.
Give him a hug and a holy kiss.
Breathe the breath of God.
Breathe the breath of God upon him. Mm. Breathe the Holy Spirit.
Excuse me, remember Benny Hinn? Remember Benny Hinn when he would blow into his microphone in order to see everybody fall around them? And then, like, all of his acolytes would start blowing around them, and people would, like, that would be, are the things you shouldn't do anymore.
Do you think Kenneth Copeland's going to show up?
And blow away with the wind of God. You know, I'm still waiting for the sequel to that. I'm waiting for, like, you know, the remix version of that song.
Yeah.
I haven't heard anything from Copeland lately.
Because he probably realized, like, wow, I was wrong.
Oh, dude, those are the craziest eyes.
Yeah, he's got some psycho eyes. But, my thoughts are, Sean Foyt, please stop. Like, those are my thoughts. And I can't. Mm. I tweet to him and I say, can you please stop doing this? Because it just...
Is he too busy to read your tweets because he's too busy holding protests?
Probably. Because the problem... I mean, again, it's a problem. It's like, dude, we're in a national... a global pandemic.
Yeah.
Where this virus is really not slowing down any. You know, their numbers are increasing. And that's, you know, the numbers... You can manipulate numbers however you want. And you know, I know numbers are increasing in Massachusetts, and I think a lot of those are from the college students coming back and colleges opening up and things like that. So that's kind of expected anyway. But it just doesn't show, like, loving your neighbor well. And that's the biggest thing that people are, like, outside the church are looking at the church and going, you refuse to wear masks and you refuse to adhere to guidelines, so you're not loving your neighbor well. And I thought that's what you're supposed to do. And so that's my biggest problem with this. Like, it's all because, you know, as we've talked about on this podcast, truth is more perceived truth than anything else.
Yes.
Perception is everything, right?
Yes.
And so, like, for instance, you know, our church, we usually do a trunk or treat for Halloween.
Right.
We're not doing a trunk or treat because it's listed on the CDC website as it's a high risk activity.
We're doing a trunk or treat.
Their church.
We have never done a trunk or treat.
They're the exact opposite. They've never done one.
We have never done one, and we were like, this is the year.
Yeah, this is the year. So I don't want to end up on our town Facebook page and, you know, and just be perceived as we're doing something wrong.
Yeah.
We're doing something that's a high risk. So we're just doing a drive-through Halloween. Come grab your bag of candy that will be pre-packaged and all this stuff and safe.
Yeah.
So
we are doing ours basically in-house.
Yeah, you're doing yours for your
kind
church.
Of like behind the building to where it's not a big public thing. So we did have that same, in all seriousness, we had that same conversation of, you know, it's not, it's actually less, it's less of a safety issue because, you know, there's plenty of ways to hold a trunk or treat do that kind of stuff. And, you know, kind of have all your distancing covered, have all of your various health and safety checks, have all of your compliance stuff, have all your it really is more about, like, how do people see it?
Yeah.
You know, it's like our building sits just like yours, kind of like on a main road.
Yeah.
You know, where the front of the building is like, boom, you do anything out in that parking lot and you are basically putting a show on display. So we are moving behind our building and up around the corner, you know, where we got some trees and some various things to hide stuff. So that way no one can just drive by and be like, look at that church holding a, you know, X, Y, or Z massive super spreader event. So,
And I just want to know, like, with the Sean Foyt thing, what is his motivation to doing these things?
Obviously to speak out against the oppression and persecution of the government against the church. How have you not read his stuff?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Well, the thing is, it's...
Listen, Chris Tomlin cowers in his studio performing, but Sean's out there for the people.
Yeah. My thing is, like, he is creating this narrative that I don't think really exists. But maybe only
the church is persecuted by its government. No,
because granted, I think there are some states, like, I think California sometimes goes a little bit too far with some of their things. I think there's some other states that are trying to go a little too far with, like, you know, if you have a state that's allowing, like, bars to open and restaurants to open, but churches have to stay closed.
I can see that as an issue. And I can see that as like the churches in those areas and the pastors in those areas saying, hey, this is not right. This is not fair.
Yeah.
Because I think there was actually a church in D.C. that basically filed a lawsuit against D.C. to say, you're having us shut down, but you're allowing all these other things to open.
Okay.
That is not fair to us. And they did it in a very, you know, I think a Christ-honoring manner, because I was kind of reading up on it. You know, they didn't do it as, like, defiant and say, mm-hmm. we don't care what you say, fine us all you want to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they just said, hey, this is not right, this is not fair, you know, because we are willing to adhere to these guidelines and things like that, so why can't we open because we're just the same as this, you know, and they're actually more of a higher risk than we would be. And so, I think, but overall, like, I mean, I think I tweeted to Sean Foy one time. I was like, look, as I'm a pastor in New England, and we've been able to be open for months. There is no oppression here. You know, you're just creating this false narrative that doesn't really exist. And, like, my thing is, like, I kind of want to, like, have him sit down with Christians who live in countries like India and China and the Middle East and say, all right, Sean, you talk about your oppression here. And I'm gonna guess that I'm gonna guess their reaction to that. They'd probably be like, "Are you serious? That's oppression?" And then they share their stories of, "Yeah, our buildings are burned all the time. People throw
like that's the thing. Like, people throw bombs. Persecution is highly costly to them." I will say this. I will share this with you because I'm kind of having this discussion with a couple people, right? Which is. There comes this kind of discussion of, is this about, you know, rights? Is it about, you know, government oppression versus freedom? You know, is it about, you know, persecution against religious worship? I believe we have a mutual friend. I believe. We'll have to talk about that more off mic so that we don't, you know, criticize openly. I believe it's a mutual friend. If not, it's at least a mutual acquaintance that has some kind of connections to a lot of our friends.
Okay.
You know, basically shared the other day, he's like, I haven't put a mask on once during this entire thing. I've only been kicked out of one police station and one dentist's office. You know, basically businesses just don't know what to do with me if I go in without something. No one usually has the guts to say anything. That kind of thing, right? And he's like, you know, here are my concerns, and I'll kind of briefly roll through them. And it's written, of course, by someone who he says he is an independent. The article definitely is not written by an independent. You know, and they go into the whole thing about, like, you know, mask wearing doesn't make any difference. They go into the whole deal of mask wearing actually could be dangerous for your own health because you're capturing all this stuff, right? And then they get into it's about social control, and it's about, you know, forcing people to try to conform to a certain look and a certain, you know, way of acting and being, and trying to basically let peer pressure, right, cause a certain type of behavior. You know, it goes on about irrational fears, you know, that really we're not supposed to be afraid of viruses because, you know, it goes on and on as it does.
Yeah.
And the problem that, you know, the problem we run into with it is, like, I feel like the people who say, oh, this is actually just about religious persecution or, you know, trying to curb a church's right to get, it falls into these same kind of arguments, which is, could it be true? Possibly in some areas. Like, you might have, I mean, certainly you have certain areas, certain cities, certain local towns that may actually not have a very good relationship with their faith movements. Maybe not even, you know, just the Christian ones, right? Like, you know, a lot of times Christians seem to think they're the only people who get persecuted. But, like, actually there's a lot of different faiths in America that sometimes are, you know, kind of considered out there or pushed around based on their, you know, based on their views. And I was just thinking about this because I was reading this article, and then, like, not too long after that, like within that same day, I came across another article being posted by another acquaintance of mine, you know, who is not a believer. Like, he's a complete, total, you know, non-theist, right? Like, he's just like, this is all a bunch of, you know, fairy dust, right?
Yes.
And it's now, you know, going through this whole thing about, like, why are these people who follow, you know, fairy gods and fake, you know, this and that. Why are they so determined to get together and breathe on each other? You know, and that's the kind of thing, right? It's like I'm not going to say that there's no town that maybe doesn't have, say, a mayor or a council who looks at faith movements or people of faith as kind of a little out there. Mm-hmm. But I think that this idea that there's this agenda of, you know, this whole thing has been driven by a desire to oppress the church is just totally bonkers.
Yeah.
I think it's looking for a conspiracy where no conspiracy exists. And I think that's the problem that I run into with guys like Sean, you know, is that they're protesting. Number one, there's enough protests going on that are legitimate right now.
Yeah.
And for you to add your protests on top just kind of takes away from the legitimacy of these protests while trying to, like, up the legitimacy of yours. The fact that you do them without a permit, the fact that you kind of bait the local, either the local community or even the local police into trying to respond to you and then, you know, show off, like, yeah. Oh, look how they came down and crushed our free speech. It's like, that's the kind of stuff that I have a real issue with. I wish, you know, Sean and churches and people would stop doing this stuff. But anyway, that was, yeah. Sean's back. He's going to D.C. If you want to jump in the car, hey, you know, we could go down.
No.
We could ride really closely together.
You know, as you're describing this, all I could think of...
We could just find a random stranger and crash on their couch.
We could.
Like, yes. Airbnb, like, hey, why not?
Why not? I mean, as you're describing this, how he likes to bait the local authorities and, you know, raise his hands in the air like he didn't do anything wrong. It made me think of how Dennis Rodman played basketball.
Yes!
Yeah. Yes! He would just poke people enough.
Right, right. Like,
they would lash out at him and he'd throw his hands up in the air.
Yeah, yeah.
Like he didn't do anything wrong. Yeah, they like call for it.
The Rodman did have an excellent career as a basketball actor.
Oh, yeah.
And it was like totally, like, if you ever watched Rodman, you know, love him or hate him, you could not deny the fact that the dude would just basically push until someone hit a breaking point, and then he would totally just oversell the response. Oh, yeah,
he would flop.
Oh, my goodness.
Like,
yeah.
I remember watching him, you know, the Bulls play the Jazz in those two finals, and he would drive Karl Malone insane.
Yes.
And Karl Malone wanted to kill him.
Yeah.
And Karl Malone would just lash out, and Rodman would throw the hands up.
Yeah,
and
throw him back.
And Karl Malone would always get called for the foul, and Malone's face would be like, what in the world? You not see what he's doing
here? Yes.
But yeah, that's how I was as you're describing this. I was like, he's like Dennis Rodman. He's like Dennis Rodman.
Yeah, no, that's you're totally spot on there. Leading into, speaking of baiting and trying to provoke, presidential debate did happen last night. Did you happen to watch it, or were you too busy watching Daniel Jones?
I was too busy watching Daniel Jones
fall, his legs fall off from underneath him.
I was too busy watching Daniel Jones tackle himself.
You know it's a bad thing. You know it says a lot about your presidential candidates and your debate process when a 1-5 team or a 1-4 team goes up against a 1-4-1 team, and they actually get pretty good views. They get pretty good ratings.
I didn't watch the whole game because after about the third quarter, I was like, man, these two teams are terrible.
They are awful. They are so awful. Bad. And yet, at times, probably more interesting than the debate was. My family has been watching the debates simply because we're fascinated with how the whole process is coming together. You know, I'm trying to watch it with the idea of like yesterday was basically watching two old guys who couldn't finish a sentence. Last time, it was two old guys who couldn't finish a sentence because someone else was jumping
in. It was the grumpy old men.
Right.
They're fighting each other.
This time, it was just simply because they lost their train of thought halfway into the sentence and a new train of thought would begin. And then that would also end and a new train of thought would begin. And it was kind of interesting to watch it happen to both sides and realize this is how the next 4 years is going to be, regardless of who wins. It's going to be an old guy who at some point might be going senile on television in front of us. It was not the greatest debate.
Maybe we should lower the minimum age of president just so we can get a...
Or put a cap on the maximum age.
Yeah, put a cap on the maximum.
You know, like, I'm okay with, like, okay, we probably don't need a 23-year-old being our president, probably.
No, probably not.
You know, but, like, cap it at 60, cap it at retirement age. Be like, hey, You know, you got until your retirement age, and then you're done. I don't know. It was a fascinating kind of debate because it was filled with that kind of back and forth, you know, where actually everybody was quite respectful. You know, there really wasn't a lot of crosstalk, but it was definitely like this person would start a train of thought and then just kind of pause, lose it, and then jump, you know, kind of do that fumble for whatever might kind of lock them into something that comes next, and then they would begin a whole new train of thought. I was a little sad to see that most of the questions, a lot of them were similar to the ones that came before, and I was kind of hoping for at least a new set of directions. But, you know, these are also driven by the probably polls that say this is what Americans are most talking about, this is what they're most concerned with. So, you know, part of me says I kind of understood it. It just meant that we retreaded a lot of ground from the last debate. New stuff that came out from President Trump in the wise maxims that he likes to speak was, my favorite was, I'm an expert on the wind. Brain pause. Excuse me. Brain pause. It kills all the birds. This was one of those kind of moments that I was describing where you could. So they're going back and forth about solar energy. Joe Biden's talking about building windmills. President Trump's talking about why. Well, it's again one of those moments where it's like in the context of it, he's talking about building windmills and how windmills can be part of the solution for clean energy. President Trump's trying to argue about how, you know, this kind of energy is expensive to build. It's actually expensive to maintain. And in doing so, I'm pretty sure he's talking about the idea that the pollution of these new things or the cost of these is, I believe he's trying to connect it to its environmental impact. But the sentence came out as, I am an expert on wind power. Excuse me. It kills all the birds.
So maybe when he said the first part, I'm an expert on the wind power. Then he said, excuse me. He might have farted. And then he realized, oh, that's going to kill
all the birds. There's so many things. It was like one of those ones where he's like, I'm an expert on the wind. Excuse me. It'll kill all the birds. And it was just one of those moments where we're like all of our family just kind of looked at each other like, did he just say wind kills all the birds? It was humorous. There were a lot of those kind of moments on both sides.
I'm pretty sure, like, wind and birds go hand in hand. Like, birds need wind to fly.
Yeah, it was
maybe not.
It was epically awful. Not as epically awful as the first time, but epically awful in its own new kind of way.
You know, it'd be interesting if he said that right when Daniel Jones fell.
Daniel Jones running like a bird, and then some wind hit him. Took him down.
I think we'll use that clip.
It's definitely one of those kind of. It was an interesting debate. It kind of moved slowly because there was not as much of the back and forth. So there was a lot more. There was a lot more conversation, and there was again some crosstalk, but it definitely was not as. It was interesting because the first one just seemed to move so much faster. Although my brain hurts so much more.
Well, this one, they had the timeout button.
Yes, well, that's
like, you know, guys, if you guys get out of hand, you're in the timeout.
Yeah, so each guy also would at times just kind of like peer out into the darkness. And it was kind of like, what are they looking at? Especially when the other guy was talking, it was like, I couldn't tell if they were trying to like look, get an eye of a staff or a campaign manager. I really wanted to know who was kind of along those sidelines. Because it was almost like they would just kind of drift off for a little bit. And then they make eye contact with somebody and then give like a wink or a nod or some kind of like a thumbs up to somebody. And then they'd like try to re-engage with wherever that guy was.
I think there's two options here. I think there's two possibilities. As pastors, we do this when we have we forgot completely what we're talking about.
You look at that friendly face.
Someone with a dramatic pause to let what we just said sink in, and in our minds are panicking, going, "Oh crap! I have no idea where I'm going
what
next."
What did I just say?
Where was I going? I totally had a brain fart.
Could totally be it. Actually,
the second option is it could be that it's like a quarterback looking for his offensive coordinator because he couldn't hear the play coming in, and they're doing
signs.
Or they're doing hand signals.
He's looking for the guy in the red jersey. You know,
they're doing hand signals.
Right. It totally had that look from time to time, like they would just be like going, and then they would just kind of like drift off for a moment and like try to catch it, and then boom, and then we clock back in. But again, half the time it would clock back in with a completely different train of thought or a new thought.
Or maybe it's a third option that
They thought they were done.
No, you gotta keep going. You gotta keep going. There's more to this.
Maybe it's like Tom Brady, and he held up the fourth.
Was that fourth down? We got that fourth. Do we have two fourth downs now?
Do I get another one? I don't know. I'm not sure. I forget.
It was entertaining. Let me see if I can. I remember having a good couple text threads. I'll just double check and see if there's anything I missed off of it, because it had some moments. It had some good moments. Oh, that was part of it. So basically, you could sum it up to two old guys. Joe's catchphrase being, come on, man. And like, I don't know if you ever watch Arrested Development?
Yeah, we watched a little bit of it.
Okay. Joe Bluth.
Okay.
All throughout the series, one of his things was to basically have like feigned indignation at something and be like, come on! And at this point, it was like he was hitting like Joe Bluth level, like achievement unlocked. He had achieved Joe Bluth level of, come on, man. To which Trump would then usually be like, oh, this is how, you know, you politicians always work. You want to, you know, talk about this instead of that. You can do better than that, Joe. And so, like, every time Joe's stuff ended, it ended with, like, come on! And he'd be, like, very sarcastic. Joe brought the sass last night.
Oh.
But then Trump would basically bring the dig with, come on, you can do better than that, Joe. You can do it. So it was this weird, like, shade-throwing debate that didn't actually, like, we all kind of turned it off, looked at each other and went, did anybody get a better idea of what the next 4 years of our country might look like? And the answer is no. But they were two guys throwing pudding at each other, or Jell-O, or whatever old guys throw at each other.
I think they should do debates like, you know, in Hamilton, when you had the scene with Alexander Hamilton and Thomas Jefferson going back and forth, they should do debates like that, where it's like this rap battle.
Mics can be dropped
and all that kind of stuff.
The discussion I had with a couple friends last night is that it did feel, as the viewer, like you were the child caught in the middle of a divorce. And that they're both sitting in front of the marriage counselor making their case as to why they should get to keep you.
Isn't that what a lot of debates end up being?
I think so, but this one felt really weirdly personal to me. Like, it was like, I feel like I'm the kid. They're each trying to keep me. I think I want to emancipate.
I think I want to peace out.
Joe did have a moment where he talked about the middle class who sit around worrying about the fact that their tires have gone bald. They may not have money for their next mortgage payment or to send their child back to community college. And I was like, that's the middle class? I was like, Joe, your middle class is really not very exciting.
that's where his campaign. That's where he's like campaign coordinator.
You may want to check that demographic because that
they're holding up the P sign for portals.
And then he went out to go talk about class. And then he went to go talk about his daughter going to some private university. And it was like, you might have lost your kind of like, I'm one of the people.
I'm one of the middle class
with my apparently falling apart car,
and my daughter's going to Harvard.
My you know, double wide trailer and Greendale. So yeah, it was definitely one of those kind of things. It was like an interesting debate, but not in a good way. Not because there was great information. It was more like, okay, well, they didn't openly violently kill each other.
Yeah.
But nothing was really learned, and you just felt a little dirty after it was done.
Did you happen to see, and kind of piggyback off this, you happen to see what John Piper wrote?
Okay, I have not. I saw it went out. I was actually quite surprised. Being the deep Piper follower that I am, I know that you're surprised that I didn't immediately just wake up and be like, what is Piper in? But it's how I start all of my days. Hello, wife. Oh, Piper. No, I'm sorry. I would never do it in that order because obviously Piper would not view. Never mind. I'm not going to go there. I'm just going to stop. I did not see it yet. It's on my things to read later today because I've had a lot of people responding to it and sharing it, but I have not had a chance to read it yet.
It is very interesting because, you know, I think as Christians, even as pastors, it's a very kind of tumultuous election year because you just don't know. You're kind of wrestling. And we were talking actually a couple that.
Well, it's a question of who do you want to win? The whore of Babylon or the beast that rises?
Exactly. So we were talking. We were talking to a couple in our church after Sunday
We had our masks on and everything while we're talking. But and our friend Mike was, and he had such a great perspective on this that I never really thought. And we're both, Allie and I both are kind of like, we're really wrestling with this. We're not 100% sure. And Mike was like, I think that's actually the best place you can be. Because I think I'd be worried if somebody was 100% sure that this is the guy.
Yeah.
Or 100% confident.
Yeah.
Or feel like they're 100% right in voting for this person. I was like, that is a good perspective. That's a great point. And so Piper basically wrote this article, not to spoil it for you. You know, I know
you can spoil it for me. It'll save me having to read more of Piper than I needed to.
But basically, he just kind of address, almost like without addressing it directly, mm-hmm. indirectly addressing this whole notion of wrestling. And he just kind of called out, you know, and he didn't name any candidate by name.
Mm-hmm.
And he just called out, but you knew who he was talking about.
Gotcha.
Trump's arrogance, Trump's very unchristlike attitude, mm-hmm. and how he handles himself. And he says, these are sins that are listed in the scripture,
yep.
that bring down nations.
Yep.
And, you know, he does address like abortion and other things that are obviously not of Christ either. And so I thought it was very, you know, almost refreshing. And nice. There's a lot of people that were talking about it and retweeting it. It's like, thank you. You know, or, you know, and because Piper is still very, I mean, I don't agree with everything he says.
No, but
then there's, and lately he said some things I'm just like, dude, not, yeah. I don't think you should
but have said Piper, that. But in all seriousness, as much as we've kind of gone back and forth with John Piper himself and this kind of a thing, and especially over the years, even just chit-chatting, right? Like, Piper actually is one of those guys where there's a lot of his stuff where I'll be like, too much, too soon, too far, something like that. But then there's like an equal amount of stuff where it's like, oh, that's just good.
Yeah.
And I value the wisdom and I value the experience. So it's like, he actually is kind of one of those guys where I have books that I go, that's actually a really good Piper book. And then he's got some stuff where I'm like, that was a horrible tweet.
Yeah. But he hasn't really changed. This is how he's been forever.
Yeah.
And I thought it was very refreshing to say, like, thank you. Finally, a well-respected, well-known Christian leader who will come out and say, here you go.
So my question leading into that, then we'll segue right from respected leader, Christian leader, who has been a certain way for a really long time, but a lot of people are just now hearing that or haven't really listened to it. And we probably have to carry this into the next episode because we're kind of hitting time. But Pope Francis, new documentary, basically calling for the church... not as a doctrinal theological position, but as an act of compassion for people outside of the church to be allowed, and that they should be affirmed in their civil unions, same-sex civil unions. Which I had a friend of mine, you know, was like, you know, you're one of those Francis lovers, basically, you know, what's up with this, and how can you destroy the, you know, the foundation of Orthodox traditional Christian marriage, and you know, how can he send the church into turmoil? And I was like, well, same kind of thing. I was like, well, if you have followed Francis for any amount of his career, his ministry, you would know that even long before he was Pope, this is actually something he's been quite open about, quite supportive of. You know, it doesn't actually change or impact to some degree his view on marriage within the church for believers. But it also kind of breaks the ice for people who see the church only as this one way of, you know, it's this way or no way, yeah. and everybody else, you know, if you don't do it this way is you know, bound to hellfire. So we had a long conversation. He went back and forth, and then eventually he was just like, well, you know, this is the only way, and anything else is bound to hellfire. And I was like, well, okay, well, there went that conversation quite quickly. We'll have to talk about it a little bit more, but I was just curious, like, did you have any kind of initial impression, or because it's an interesting time of year for all of these different kind of things between Piper kind of bringing out something that's quite sensible, Pope Francis, you know, kind of bringing out something that is probably I would put into the realm of compassion, mm-hmm. As opposed to like giving into secularism. I think it's just a compassionate view of the church, which I think the church in general right now needs to have a lot of compassion. I think it would be better and more healthy if we were known for our compassion than for just our dogmatic stuff,
yeah.
you know? So I just was curious, like, did you read that one or did you take a look at that one?
I saw the headline. I didn't read the article.
I read that article
one because I didn't read the Piper one. I think it's the Piper one because I was reading on the, I was more onto the Francis stuff. So
I wasn't too surprised. Like, yeah. I was like, oh, yeah, I kind of expected that. Yeah. So, yeah.
Well, I'd love to talk about it a little bit more because I'm interested as we go into the election season and post-election season. I'm interested to get some thoughts, and I know I've been thinking about this myself, just the idea of, like, what is the church's, you know, if we look at kind of the love justice, you know, do justly, love mercy, yeah, walk humbly with your God, that sense of a compassionate ministry, a compassionate community, as opposed to one that's just, you know, boom, here are the lines, cross them and die, you know,
yeah.
I mean, which is stuff that you and I have talked about for years. Yeah. So I'm curious to know a little bit more of what you're thinking on that, but I'm sure we'll have plenty of opportunities as we get into it. Yeah. An election and post-election cycle.
Yeehaw!
It's gonna be great. It's gonna look like Daniel Jones running for a touchdown.
He's running long, and then
legs are gonna fall off at about 20 yards away.
We're gonna tackle ourselves.
All right, everyone. Hey, thanks for hanging with us this morning. We'll talk to you later. Next time.
See ya.